So, Robin, what's in store for our first episode, the Prime Time True Crime Podcast?
All right, today we've got the Somerton Man case, which is also known as the Tarman Shud case.
So an Australian one to get us started.
Yep, Adelaide, Australia, 1948.
All right, let's get into it. So before we start talking about this episode, bit of housekeeping. If anyone was one of our first subscribers, you'll notice a quick change in name and kind of theme what we're doing here. We found that our topics before, what we're trying to do with the whole redoing crimes and the way the criminals may be a bit insensitive towards the case themselves, so we've decided to become more of a kind of casually talk about crime podcast. We normally do this a lot just by ourselves, so we thought to kind of have an audience, let people join in conversation with us. Any thoughts, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I have an extensive, you know, catalogue of true crime knowledge. Maybe that's a good thing, I don't know.
I think how this will eventually end up is I'm sort of a slacker when it comes to researching, so I know a lot of base level stuff about crime, but not to the level of Robin, so hopefully she can kind of fill in some information. I can maybe play the role of you guys who might not know so much and ask a question to be asked, give our little criminologist a bit of a brain scrub, get some ideas.
Try not to get killed,
obviously. Yep, so we're now known as the Prime Time True Crime Podcast, which is a tongue twister I will get wrong every single time I say it, but hopefully...
We won't tell you how many takes there was.
Oh, so many takes. All right, anyway, so Tarman Shud, you said Australian case from the 1940s.
Indeed, so it is the unsolved case of a body which has never been identified, and it was found in Somerton Park in Adelaide in 1948.
Is that close to any, like, major cities, or do you know much about that?
Glenelg. Which you might be familiar with, Beaumont Children.
Ah, obviously, yeah, cool.
Which was about 20 years, not quite.
Awesome. So I know a little bit about this case. So guy on the beach, dressed like, I guess, middle class, you'd say. No labels on his clothes, I remember.
Yeah, so when the body was found, he was lying in the sand with his head against the seawall. So he was kind of like sitting up, kind of, yeah.
His like neck was kind of perched up, right?
Mm.
Kind of like how you know when you sleep and you get that awkward crink in your neck, that sort of position. So, was it a very comfortable position, like naturally, or was it kind of?
I wouldn't imagine it was.
It's not something you'd naturally find yourself lying in.
And falling asleep, you'd probably tilt, I imagine.
Yeah.
So he had an unlit cigarette in his pocket. He had an unused train ticket, a bus ticket, but they couldn't actually confirm whether that was used or not. He had an aluminium comb, which they later found originated in the US, and he had chewing gum and matches.
So he's obviously got, this is 1940s, you say?
1948, so just after World War II.
So having American products wasn't that unusual, but they felt it was necessary to kind of say that this was an American product, so he's obviously either, I assume you can just buy stuff online, obviously, so he's obviously been to America or knows someone's been to America or shopped it. Someone like who sells American goods.
Yeah, well,
so
that's about to come up, actually. There's more American things.
Oh, okay. So there's more themes. There's quite a lot of evidence pointing towards he's an American citizen, not...
Or a soldier or
yeah,
something.
Spy.
We'll get to that one, too. All right. So the night before, so the 30th... sorry, this was the 1st of December, so the 30th of November. A number of people reported seeing the man on the beach. Some reported he had moved slightly, or he was moving. Others believed he was just a drunk who'd fallen asleep on the beach. Others reported that they thought it was strange that the mosquitoes buzzing around him, he didn't like react or try and swat them away.
He was kind of just letting them have their way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this kind of position he was in, and a drunk, that doesn't seem such a far-fetched, you know.
Yeah, especially... on the beach where he might have went down to maybe watch the waves and, you know, have a few... Was there any alcohol found around him?
No.
But I guess people wouldn't invest... I mean, if I saw someone lying on a beach, like, kind of look like they were sleeping, I wouldn't go and investigate. It seems a bit impersonal.
You could also maybe assume he was just a homeless, you know?
Yeah, especially, around that time. What, end of the 1940s, world. Saying, yeah, post-war, probably a returning soldier who's
Had much fortune. Yeah, no one really... You know, was too concerned about what was going on there. So the pathology report, so his name was John Cleland, and he said the man was aged between 40 to 45. He was in good physical condition. He was 180 centimetres or 5'11" and had grey eyes. His hands and nails showed no signs of manual labour, but his feet met in a wedge shape which was consistent with an individual who wore boots or was a ballet dancer. He was dressed in a white shirt, a red, white and blue tie, brown pants, socks and shoes, and a double-breasted jacket that had American tailoring, which is where the American
part comes up again. So you're saying he's totally consistent with either boots or ballet.
Yep.
So that gives credence towards either military, obviously, or maybe a spy. My idea is...
You already stuck on this spy.
Well, theory. No, I was thinking like the Black Widow thing, how she does ballet. I assume that might be a spy just thing. Just a
side hobby.
Yeah, pop culture has ruined my understanding of normal things. Mid-40s, they say.
Late 40s. Oh, age. Sorry, I thought you meant the year.
No.
I was like, how many times do I have to say the year?
No. So he was like...
Early 40s, so 40 to 45.
Okay, so early to mid 40s. American clothing and feet like a ballerina. So they don't have any idea of his name yet?
No information just yet. That's what the pathologist recorded to begin with.
And pathologists, they just normally test, like...
They look at all the they do the autopsy.
Oh, okay, yeah. They examine
all the evidence that's brought in.
Right.
So, with your question about ID, so all the labels on his clothes have been removed, and there was no wallet in his possession. He had no ID, and his dental records weren't matched to anyone.
Was it at all common to take your labels off clothes back in the 40s?
Or? Not that I'm aware of. I don't think that's even a common thing today. I mean. The only time I take labels off clothes, like, do you ever buy shirts and they're like, they like tags, oh, like, yeah. Scratch.
No, the worst one's the ones down the side of your belly, like kind of on the left hand side always. They are the worst.
So, I mean, that would be the only instance where I would personally be concerned about where my clothes had come from, etc.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of an unusual
thing to do. It's a suspicious thing.
Alright, so the time of death was estimated at 2 a.m. on the 1st of December 1948. So, by the time he was found, he'd been dead a few hours on the beach.
Yeah.
But the witnesses, that's not to say that the witnesses who had seen him earlier in the night, he may have still been alive. So
they just weren't sure because...
But the time of death wasn't estimated at 2 o'clock.
There was no one who saw him more than once, maybe saw him move his head or anything?
Yeah, well, the few witnesses said they saw him, like, just slightly... jolt to the side.
But they also might be misremembering, like they probably weren't paying the most attention to him.
So in his report, the pathologist said that the heart was normal, but he did find small vessels you wouldn't normally see in the brain were noticeable and had congestion. There was blood mixed with food in the stomach, the liver contained blood, and the spleen was abnormally large.
So there's been an internal sort of injury with the blood, or?
Yeah, well that suggests... something's gone. Yeah, there's no physical signs of harm as far as...
So no bruises, broken bodies?
No gunshot, no.
Yeah.
Nothing consistent with a blunt force.
Just a few things on his brain and a little bit of internal bleeding.
Which was unusual.
Yeah.
The autopsy showed that the man's last meal was a... I think it's pronounced... Is it pasty or pasty?
Pasty?
Pasty.
P-A-S-T-I-E?
No, P-A-S-T-Y.
Pasty.
Wait, do we still have those?
Pasties?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I can't say I've ever had one. Are they like
you him? Probably haven't ended up dead on the beach, have you?
Are they like you know what's funny? Beaumont children. One of the last things they ordered was a pasty.
No correlation at all.
No.
As someone famously said on BuzzFeed Unsolved, that criminals don't live in a big connected universe. There's no EU of criminals.
So the pasty... whatever you want to call it.
Peas.
Pasty.
Pasty, I think.
Pasta.
I think pasty is the correct pronunciation.
Was eaten 3 to 4 hours prior to death. So if we do the maths backwards, we're looking at 10 o'clock. Which seems to
PM?
Be, yeah, which seems... because he was found dead at 2 a.m. And then the autopsy suggested that he eaten it 4 hours prior to
death. But stuff like food surely is pretty rough, especially back in the 40s for direct times.
Just seems a bit late to be eating dinner.
Not really. I mean, he could have been snacking. It's a pasty. It's not a big meal.
That's true.
It's like a small little bakery good, isn't it?
So tests didn't reveal anything foreign in his body, so nothing strange there.
Foreign as in, like, a foreign object, not a American foreign, thing again.
They're talking foreign objects, they're yeah. talking poison, they're talking...
Things that aren't meant to be there.
Yeah. So, your brain, that's not meant to be there.
Thanks. You wouldn't know, I don't use it that often.
No. So, the pathologist concluded the death wasn't natural. He suggested a poison, but he couldn't prove that theory. So, the main theory... is that it was some type of unidentifiable, untraceable
poison
that could not be...
And we're talking post-World War II, right?
Mm.
So that kind of thing wouldn't be out of the ordinary for a country to have developed this sort of poison that hasn't been kind of recognised or labelled by another government.
No, so...
It's pre-Cold War too, isn't it?
They ended up embalming the body. Sorry.
It's pre-Cold War, right?
It was Cold War. 70s?
Moving on.
I don't know my World Wars very well. I know when the first two were.
Well, I mean, the Cold War isn't a World War.
I know Vietnam was 60.
I don't think we're in Cold War yet. I think we're in just like post-World War II.
Afghanistan-Iraq War was only 2000.
Hi, welcome to our wartime memories with Robin.
I don't remember. So the body was embalmed. That was basically so they could... very specific, go in and say the body and
try and identify
who this person was.
Yeah.
About 6 weeks later, a suitcase was found at the Adelaide Railway Station. It had its label removed and it was checked in on November 30th, 1948, and it was believed to be owned by the man on the beach.
So once again, we've got labels being removed, which is a link. Which is
consistent with what we know about the body itself.
American-made clothing, do we know, or...? Like the style? Was there a certain style the countries had back then?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'll go through what was in there. So we had a red dressing gown.
Okay.
Red slippers.
Okay.
Man marked is red. Underpants, pajamas, shaving equipment, screwdriver.
Red screwdriver, yep.
All identification marks on the clothes, yet again, were removed. But police found the name T. Keen on a tie. Keen on a laundry bag. And Keen without the E, so the other ones were K-E-A-N-E.
Yep.
Without the E on a singlet. Police believed whoever removed the tags either overlooked these items or possibly left them because it wasn't the dead man's name and would draw no link to.
So it's like a red herring sort of thing. Ah, red herring. Red dressing gown. I'm on it. Oh. We've got the links, Rob. Yeah. Conspiracy. So basically, they have an idea of he might have been Keen or this might have been like a misdirection from someone who maybe posthumously removed all the labels.
Mm. Well, whoever this person was either didn't want to be known or someone didn't want them...
To be known.
To be known.
Yeah. So once again, we're into the theory of maybe a soldier who did something in World War II or a spy or...
I definitely don't think that your everyday, you know, kill your husband kind of woman... Or the other way around, kill your wife.
Yeah.
Doesn't go to this much extent to cover up the identity of the victim.
I also, it's also, why would you leave the body in the open if you're killing your spouse?
Exactly. If you don't want anyone to know who this person is, why was he left in the open? Was he left there for an example?
I think so far, just as we're sort of halfway through what's going on, my two theories are, obviously, one is that he was undercover or something like that, or something where he didn't want people to find him, and maybe they found him, and obviously, if he didn't want to be found, no one else is going to find him. Or this is all just a little bit of coincidence, and he was just a man who maybe got sick or something happened, and he ended up winding up at a beach to pass away, and this other label stuff maybe just is a coincidence, where maybe the suitcase isn't his, maybe... There was a practice of removing labels that wasn't, you know, documented well back then. Like, there's a lot of stuff we do now where it's not a mainstream thing to do, but it still gets done by people. So maybe it's one of those things where it was a group of individuals like, you know what? No labels on clothes. I don't want to promote, like, brands. I don't want to promote where I'm buying things from. I just want to have clothes as clothes. It could be something, like, even silly like that where this has just ended up in a big overthinking. I think... What tends to happen with cases, especially unsolved ones, is a lot of the theories are just people overthinking in hindsight, where they're like, okay, this links to this, this links to this. Like you said before, of your pasty thing, like, even something silly like that, like, is a little anchor. People just latch onto it. And they're like, this is a clue. But the problem with crimes like this, and I think we'll get into it a lot more as we go into other crimes, but they're not Sherlock books. They're not made for you to solve. Things sometimes just happen because there's all billions of people, and sometimes random events happen where we just don't know why they happen.
And I think that's what we're going to say from this case. Obviously, it's unsolved. Yeah.
You can see in other cases, like the lady who was in the elevator who ended up in the hotel.
Elisa Lam.
Yeah, Elisa Lam. Like, that we look into it like, oh, maybe this and this and this happened. But sometimes people just end up in random places because of randomness, and we will never know why. And I think that might be either what's happened here or the common, I guess, common theory that he was just a spy who got silenced, I guess.
So you think sometimes the suspicion isn't always necessary?
I think people have this want to solve crimes that others haven't. It's like, it's the allure of being Sherlock, right?
I assume we're not talking about, like, cases where it's obvious the individual has been.
I think we're talking of cases where the police don't have a lot of evidence and it's been...
There's a lot of, circumstantial, different little
And I think
things.
People who aren't qualified, especially, I can't talk, I'm not qualified either, people who don't really know evidence in that will just latch onto something and be like, no, this is something we have to look into deeper. This is connected to this, and they start cobwebbing things. But that sometimes connections aren't there, and they just kind of exasperate what's going on to kind of make their own theory make sense.
Yeah, I think you'll say that a lot more, because as I touch on a few different theories and ideas, you might seem to understand. Yeah. You might also believe that this person may be onto something.
And, like, it's I'm not having a go at these people. Like, it is quite fun to sit, like, we do it all the time, sit around and just come up with kooky reasons as to why crimes might happen or who might have done them. It's a fun thing, and it's quite enjoyable to listen to these theories and that, but sometimes we've got to realise that, hey, Occam's razor, what is the most likely thing that will happen? I think at the moment, with what you've told me so far, the most likely thing to have happened to this guy is he just ate something wrong, maybe had an internal injury or a thing that we weren't aware of, maybe something inside him went wrong and he just ended up on a beach and died. Labels, coincidence. Suitcase, probably not his. If it is his, coincidence once again with the labels. But anyway, what's some more information you can feed me?
Alright. So, a search, pretty much in, I'm not sure what kind of databases and that type of thing they were using. I don't think AFIS, which is your fingerprint and technology, I don't think any of those things were
developed. Well, his fingerprints would already have to be on file.
Well, yeah, if he was a soldier, I imagine that would... Well, I don't know what type of technology they really had back then. I assume it was a lot of paperwork if they were looking down the soldier angle.
It'd be filing cabinets.
Because it wasn't all...
It'd be correspondence with other countries who are allies.
But the bottom line...
So, allied countries would be like Australia, right? So,
yeah.
America, US, China, France. Those sort of countries. I think they did take your fingerprints for the army.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah, but definitely back in that time, I'm not.
If anyone knows, please let us know. Contact us through Twitter or...
I just know that you wouldn't have things like the AFIS database for fingerprints, and you definitely wouldn't have, you know, where you could just... Because they didn't have computers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not like
a big
network.
But you can just type in blah, 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 and then...
Or blah, blah, blah street.
Mm.
Shout out to blah, blah, blah.
Like, so
recurring character.
A search showed that no tea keen was missing in any countries that were of English speaking.
I guess you'd be pretty keen if he was, right?
Keen for tea. Terrible, I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's late, guys.
All right. At the inquest, so they ended up doing an inquest, so they didn't, you know, obviously didn't discover who this man was.
Yeah. Is this a royal inquest or?
No, just an inquest into the coronial inquest.
Yeah.
The pathologist noticed that the man's shoes were remarkably clean, which wasn't consistent with a man who'd been on the beach or wandering Adelaide all day, which served the theory that someone else had placed him there to die.
That sounds like a stretch, right?
This also may have accounted, so I don't know if you're familiar with poison.
I know you are.
But normally what you see in someone who has been poisoned from what we...
Is erratic behaviour, right?
From what we understand is...
Once again, pop culture.
Vomiting or convulsions.
Oh, is your body tries to spit it out?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this theory that someone else might have placed him there to die, because there was no witness or anything that said that there was vomit... Well, there's no vomit found around him.
Mm.
The only thing that may have occurred was the slight movement that the witnesses had seen might have been a little convulsion, but...
That shoe theory seems a little bit far-fetched. I don't want to say I'm smarter than
the
other.
You know when you walk on the beach, you hate going to the beach because you get sand in your shoes.
He wasn't that far on the beach. He was, like, quite close to the entrance.
But the minute you step on the beach, it's on your shoes.
Yeah, but he's been lying in the sun all day. So his feet were up, so surely if there was sand on the bottom, it would have fallen off. Also, walking around Adelaide, he could have just went from his hotel, which he was probably staying at because of the bag, got some bite to eat, and went to eat at the, you know, eat at the beach, watching the sunset. Because it would, what, 9 o'clock?
Is this episode just going to be you proving everyone else's theories wrong?
I'm not saying the theories are wrong. I'm just saying that that seems like a bit of a stretch, right? That, oh, his shoes weren't sandy, so he was placed there. It's like. Like, once again, like, how sand sometimes isn't... It's quite solid. Sometimes he was close to the entrance, so... Like, I don't know, man.
The witnesses that had seen... That I talked about at the beginning, they were cold at the inquest, and none of them could possibly confirm the man they saw the night before was the... Who we know as the Somerton man.
So they could confirm there was a small movement in his head, but not...
They can confirm they saw a man on the beach in that position, but they cannot confirm that it was the same man.
Okay, that makes sense. I don't think you'd be paying that much attention to a rando on the beach.
Especially if you thought it was just a drunk, you'd be like, oh,
let's go. You'd be like, grab the kids, honey, let's go.
But around the same time the inquest was happening, a rolled up piece of paper was found in a pocket sewn into the man's trouser pockets.
Is this the infamous Tarm and Shud book?
It is indeed. I don't know how they missed that pocket the first time around.
Planted evidence. That's my theory.
Wow, okay. Okay, it had the words, as Brody has correctly indicated, Tarm and Shud written on it.
Which means pub crawl.
Pub crawl. Can't even get my senses in there. Tarm and Shud means let's go to pub crawl and then you die on the beach. Public library officials translated the phrase to mean ended or finished, and it could be found on the last page of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. I think that's the right pronunciation.
What language?
I'm not sure, actually.
Probably Polish, right?
Latin?
Latin? Okay, you said 1940.
Eight.
You actually have my Latin book with me.
So police appealed to the public for the copy of the book with the writing missing. And someone who they never made, like they never, the police never said who he was.
Yeah.
So someone came forward with the book with the missing part, saying that it was found at the back of a car at about the same time the body was found in December.
So they just kind of found it. It was, the missing part was matching the one that was found in his jacket?
Yep. So on the back cover of the book, police discovered indents of handwriting, which showed a telephone number, an unidentified number, and text that seemed like an encrypted message, which they still haven't been able to
crack
today.
So, the police have had this body since it was found, right?
Yep.
So there's no chance someone slipped in this note posthumously, right? He must have had this on him
when he died. Unless it was someone that was working for...
another government who's creating red
herrings. I don't know in the 40s if they're still paying people to do their dirty work for them. But,
oh, definitely. But governments are always doing that.
I think that's honestly a bit far-fetched.
Governments, famously, pretty bad guys.
So the theme of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, sorry if I'm not pronouncing that right, is that one should live life to the fullest and have no regrets at the end. This poem led police to think that this might be an indication that the man may have poisoned himself to commit suicide. And if he was a spy, that sort of feeds the theory that he would have had access to those types of poisons they suspect killed him.
That's a little bit too cute, right? Are you feeling that? Like, that's a little bit too cute that this man's like, I'm going to go out suicide style, I'm going to try outdo Kurt Cobain 40 years later by dying with a book that means to live your life to the fullest. That's like... Just write Carpe Diem, like...
Don't make fun of what I have tattooed.
But there are easier ways. That just seems, like, really cute and, like, a lot of effort to go to. Especially, it was hidden, right, the note?
Mm.
So if it wasn't found, then his whole, like, cutesy little act thing was just for nothing. Like, if you're going to do it, wouldn't you be clutching in your hand or have it somewhere more identifiable? I think that book thing is maybe just a coincidence what the book's about. Or maybe the book is... sentimental in a way, but I don't think it was suicide.
Or maybe someone planted it there just for their own perverted, you know.
Like a little, like, F you to people who would know about this case.
Or just to confuse the matter.
If I remember correctly, there is a lad coming up soon who knows a bit more than what they say, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, most people are of the opinion.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, we're about to get to that person. Well done.
All right, let's get into it.
All right, so the telephone number at the back of the book, they figured out it belonged to a woman named Jessica Thompson.
Who lived... JT.
Justin Timberlake. Belonged to Justin Timberlake.
Okay.
Who lived in the suburb where the body was found. When interviewed, she said she did not know the man or why he would have her phone number. She did say that at some point in 1948, an unidentified man had visited her neighbours asking about her. The police officer believed Jessica's behaviour was evasive, and he believed she knew his identity. Jessica's daughter, Kate, said in a television interview that she also believed her mum knew who he was.
So, 1940s, right? Having a phone number is quite, like, relevant, right? If you have someone's phone number, it means you have met with them personally or had exchanged pleasantries at some point. How far... Do you know how far, like, white books and yellow books were at the time?
Oh,
they probably existed.
Not well-versed in yellow pages.
They probably existed, but to, like, randomly find one lady's number, write it down, it just seems... Nah, there's something going on here.
In 1949, Jessica requested police didn't keep a permanent record of her name or release her details to the public as it would be embarrassing and harmful to her reputation.
That went so well for her. I'm glad no one knows Jessica Thompson's name. I'm glad that they kept that under wraps.
According to another officer, when she was shown the plaster cast, Jessica looked taken aback and fearful of what she was looking at. Jessica admitted...
The what, sorry?
The plaster cast of the body.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Jessica admitted to owning a copy of the book, so the...
Time and Shard.
No, that's not what it's called. It's called The Rubaiyat of Omar.
Oh, Time and Shard's a phrase, right, yeah.
Yeah. She admitted to owning a copy of the book while working at a hospital during World War II. She don't believe she had given her copy to a name... to a man named Alf Boxall, and for a while it was suspected that Alf Boxall might be the Somerton man. He was eventually tracked down and had an intact copy of the book with no rips, so no time and shud ripped out at the end, and this was signed by Jessica.
Did she mention that she signed the book?
No.
Does this mean, like, sign the book to just say it's your property?
She wrote in the back of it. She wrote something in the back of it.
Oh, like, addressed to him? Or is it just like, this is property of Jessica?
I can't remember. I think she just, like, signed.
Because I assume that, like, back in the day when books were a bit more relevant and, like, kind of a thing to have, you would, like, label, this is my property, please return if found. Assuming this book's rare, right? Because if it's rare, then it's weird that she's defaced it. But if it's just, like, a book that she liked, then...
Mm.
Yeah.
So, we'll come back to Alf, but keep in mind he was working... for a security organisation at one point. Not security. Yeah, security, that's the right word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of security? Just like general or...?
So like spy, like ASIO.
Of course he was. Yeah. Jesus.
That thickens there.
Like national security then. I thought he meant like security as in like...
He's just a Kmart.
I thought he was like guarding his local JB Hi-Fi from school kids.
So there's...
Super Australian reference for you all.
There are theories that the Somerton man was a spy, given the time he died, end of World War II, and the manner in which he died.
Yeah.
All right.
Spies for Soviet Russia.
Now we're on to my favourite man.
Okay.
In 2009, a team led by Professor Derek Abbott at the University of Adelaide...
Dezza!
...tried to crack the case. They found that the Somerton man had distinct ears and that he had hypodontia, which is a rare genetic disease of both the lateral incisors, which is only present in 2% of the population.
Is that what I have? Like, out of curiosity? Where both my lobes are different?
No, that's just called Dumbo.
Okay, fair enough. Fun fact for you playing at home again, I have two different... I have a joined ear lobe and the one that just kind of hangs.
No, you've just got big ears.
What?
In June 2010, Abbott obtained a picture of Jessica's son, Robin. Interesting name. Which clearly showed that, like the Somerton man, Robin had the same ear features and the same dental anomaly.
2%.
2%.
And dental as well, which would be another both, like...
Yeah, which is like a big, you know.
All right.
So...
Now we're getting juicy. See, this is more concrete than what we were talking about before. This is like pure scientific, hey, this is an anomaly. There's still an active chance, but the more science things you chuck at me, the more I'm getting hot for it. You know, I'm getting a little bit worked up. I'm like, oh, you know, it was my boy SM. Was he banging the girl Jessica? Let's go.
The media suggested Robin may have been a love affair child leading to the Somerton's man's death. Now, if we think back to our friend Alf Boxall, who had experience working with national security...
Did he maybe sneak...
Was there something going on?
Before, obviously you're about to tell me, but did they do a DNA test?
DNA testing can confirm or deny this.
The body... Sorry? Can what?
Confirm or deny.
Can it really? It can either confirm or deny, so it's yes or no.
Yes.
Thanks, DNA.
That is what DNA does.
Cheers.
The body would require exhuming. But the Attorney General in Adelaide has denied the request.
Why?
Because he doesn't believe that there is public interest.
I think he's wrong. I think the fact that we're talking about it says that there's enough interest. What's the daughter, her thoughts on it? Is she happy too?
So Robin is now dead. So Robin was a male, sorry. I didn't make that clear.
Sorry, yeah.
Robin was the son.
You've got me twisted to everyone, Robin is a guy.
Robin was the biological son of Jessica Thompson.
Yeah.
And
hold on a sec, did he know his father? Probably. Oh, I guess that's just not really...
I know that there was the man, because what happened was she was having a relationship of some description with Alf Boxall.
Yeah.
And then...
Oh, so that's probably why the book was signed then. If they've got a relationship, Alf, it's probably like a gift.
Alf, like, disappeared or something. I don't know what happened with Alf, but something happened there. And they had to separate, and then...
Probably his job,
Jessica right? ended up marrying the stepfather of Robin.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't...
Hang on, you say he's in security?
Yeah.
So the next big event was Cold War, so he was probably called away for something to do with that, or...
So, in a weird...
Divorces weren't that common back then, right?
Not in 74.
Oh, 70s then.
74 was the Family Law Act.
Yeah.
In a funny twist of events... The Professor Derek Abbott ended up marrying the granddaughter of Jessica Thompson, so Robin Thompson's daughter.
My man.
A lot of people speculated that he just did that just to be the person that cracked the case.
No.
And got her DNA and was not interested.
The governor's already told him, though, that there's no way he's getting some to men DNA. Mm. So... And that's it for the case?
That's all my information laid out on the table for everyone.
What are your thoughts?
I think this Derek Abbott theory has a lot of weight. I think that I definitely believe the cause of death was poison, and it was something that was not detectable in the 40s. And may have broken down or degraded, which is why they can't trace it at all now. I think the whole thing about the dental features and the ears is a lot to try and get... Yeah. It's a lot to try and go past and not acknowledge that's... I don't understand the Attorney General of Adelaide. This is one of Adelaide's most notorious cases.
Maybe it sets a bad precedent where people can just start asking for exhumes and be like, well, you did it for this case, so why not this case?
That's possible.
Maybe they only want to save it for cases where there's been quite clear evidence of foul play, where they're like, hey, look, this is someone who should probably be locked up for this. Can we get information?
I mean, the whole theory at the moment is... They have the same ears and the same incisors.
Which is quite rare.
It
could be a coincidence, but...
But yeah. I feel like if you go up to the Attorney General and you're like, hey...
Oh, so the Attorney... Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and you were like, hey, Somerton man has funny ears and funny teeth. So does this person. Do you reckon... Yeah. I don't think that's going
to... It just sets a bad precedent.
I don't think that's going to sit well.
Or, conspiracy theory for you, the government's in on it. And they don't want people to find out who this man is.
Well, if he was a spy.
Could be.
That is 100% a possibility that's been carried down for, what are we, nearly 80 years?
Yeah.
It'll be 80 years this year.
Ooh.
No, I can't do maths. Not at all. Hang on.
Like 32. Oh, sorry.
Not even 48.
72 years.
72 years.
What
are your thoughts?
I think if we Occam's razor it probably a guy who was, something went wrong in his body and he went on the beach to die.
Do you buy the spy theory? Do you think he had anything to do with that sort of work?
A spy seems unlikely. Maybe someone to...
What about the poison, though?
Maybe. Like, so...
Yeah, well, first of all, do you think...
This is going to sound really a stupid question. I know you don't know the answer, but maybe something to think about. Was there a shop selling pasties near this beach, or was this something that he was given by someone or had, like, you know, not bought from a shop?
Well, apparently, what I was reading, there was nothing dodgy about the pasty.
But that if it was poison and, like, it
and it's undetectable, dissolved then in how stomach, it, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Do you buy the poison theory then, or do you think there was another cause of death possible?
Poison, fungus, something like that that's funky in the body, maybe. Because, like, there's no other ways you could die, right? Like, it has to have been a poison of some type. And being the 40s, post-World War II, there's a lot of stuff we just don't know about happening.
There's a lot of, yeah, there wasn't much.
I don't buy the cutesy suicide story at all. It's just too cute.
I think it seems like there's too much effort for it to be.
Yeah. I don't buy the scorned lover theory, because...
Not normally when people... I mean, I'm not speaking for a majority in any case. Suicides are all different.
Yeah.
But from what we know about suicides, people don't generally make that much effort when going to...
I mean, like, with the scorned lover thing, like you said, like, that's a lot of effort. And why would you leave the body out for the public?
Do you think someone put him there? Do you think maybe that's...
No.
He died... He was poisoned elsewhere?
I don't think he can get away with... So he was dead at 9 o'clock, right?
Well, no, they said 2 a.m.
No, I thought he was on the beach.
He was on the beach at that point.
So that's what happened. Someone had to have, between the hours of whatever to 9 p.m., drag his body to the beach, undetected, in Adelaide.
And there was witnesses who were on
yeah,
the beach.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
No.
I think there's a lot in this case that's interesting. I think it's one of those things where we probably won't ever know unless we get an exhum, and then...
We can either confirm or...
Question for you. Is it more fun to have theories, or would you like a concrete answer?
I would always like a concrete answer. Every case that's unsolved, as you'll find out as it goes on, frustrates me.
Yeah.
And things such as this one, and I'm sure we might do an episode on the Beaumont children,
yeah.
The Joanne Ratcliffe and Kirsty Gordon case, the Wanda Beach murderers... All those...
The elevated lady.
The Derek Percy conspiracy theories and... There's so many things. And, with the Beaumont children in particular, like, I know that's not going to get solved now. And I think that's also the same for the Somerton men. I highly doubt we're ever going to know the answer.
I just want an answer to D.B. Cooper. That's the only one I care about. Because that guy is my hero.
Maybe that's the next episode.
I love him so much.
Maybe you'll have to entertain me.
Right, I think that just about does it for the Somerton Man. Any follow-up questions? Anywhere people can get more information on this case from?
So, BuzzFeed Unsolved are always good. They do great episodes, and they do it, obviously, a lot better than us at home.
They obviously do a lot of non-BuzzFeed, like, type of content, which is nice. They're, like, the only BuzzFeed-ish thing I like, to be honest.
I've recently started getting into podcasts, and one podcast I completely recommend if you're a true crime, you know, well, I don't know what the right word is.
Fan.
Case File.
He's
incredible. He puts so much effort into the research he does, and you know, he doesn't really theorize all the way.
No, it's very concise.
He gives you a lot of information.
Yeah. Another one I recommend is, I'm a big Sans Pants fan, so if you go into their paid service, they have a podcast called Jackson Bailey Spooks America, which is kinda like we're doing, but a lot more jokes and a lot more. They don't have a Robin, so it's a lot less research. Obviously, Robin, fantastic at researching stuff. I'm very lazy, so it's nice to kind of get in depth with it.
It's really funny when Brody says, oh, we're going to film a podcast episode. I'm like, oh, I have to sit here for a few hours and get all of my information together.
And just on that note, like, obviously, this is our first podcast. We don't know if it'll be big. This is more of a hobby thing for us.
And especially with what we're in the middle of right now, unfortunately,
yeah.
It's something for us to...
So shout out to our friends. They have a podcast about wrestling called the PG Wrestling Retrospective. Jack and Lewis. The podcast doesn't release that many episodes, but their back catalog is some of the greatest things if you're a wrestling fan. We're obviously big fans and friends of them, so they're kind of inspired us to do this, so... thanks to them. I know Lewis was our first listener, I'm fairly sure, so it's always nice.
Just let us know your theories on the Somerton Man. What do you think happened? Do you think some of these ideas hold any weight?
Yeah, you can reach us on Twitter, or maybe we'll start a Facebook page or something like that. But yeah, Email me. I probably give my email away for later. But yeah, on Twitter, we'll be posting this thing. Me and Rob will get in contact with us. Let us know. Anything else you want to lead off with, Rob? Anything non-crime related that you've been into lately? Anything big in your life?
I think all I have to say is please take care of yourself right now. Make sure you're isolating as much as you can. Wash your hands.
Yeah, scary as crimes are, I think what's happening at the moment is more scary than a guy winding up dead from poison.
I think this is, you know, because it's not a human, we can just stop in his tracks when we catch him. It's an infection, unfortunately. But stay safe, look after yourself.
I miss sport.
Same.
Anyway, that's been us from the Prime Time True Crime Podcast. That is quite a mouthful. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully we can churn out episodes once a week, twice a week. Something like that, keeping our listeners involved. I love, you know, when I refresh my podcast app, getting a new one from my favorite podcast is great. So we'll try give you guys that feeling. But thank you for listening all the way through if you have. And good night. Farewell.
See ya.